The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, it's almost become a ritual for my next guest and I for 21 books.
Yes.
21 years, I suppose.
Yes, it's our annual meeting.
P.S. I Love You being the very first. The latest one is called Paper Heart. And on the cover, there is a sundered heart in red,
yes,
which is made of paper. But there is another reference to what the paper hearts are in the novel.
Yes, my character, her name is Pip. She's 32 years old and she loves to write these little poems. And she's created a character called Origami Girl and she folds them up into origami shapes. And puts them away in a drawer, locks them away. It's kind of her only way of really asserting herself and finding her voice, because she has a very controlling mother and parents who really stepped in and took over her life when she had a baby at 16. So we meet her in the book when she's 32 years old.
And therefore, do the math, her daughter is 16.
Exactly. So she's now looking at her daughter and thinking of all the things that she could have been. And so writing these little paper hearts is the only way that she can express her hopes, her desires, her feelings. She folds herself away. She's folded everything away and made herself smaller for so many years.
There are so many metaphors in the book, but she has been, I suppose, deprived of opportunity because the town she lives in, Ballybeg, is a repressed town.
Yeah, well, I really wanted to dig into the digging theme in this, actually. So it's in Offaly. It's a fictional town called Ballybeg, just outside.
There's a telescope nearby, so yes. I'm thinking, could it be Birr?
Well, it is outside of Birr. And it's a town that would have been famous for its turf cutting. And so it's kind of in transition. There's some people who are happy to move with the times and there are others who are fighting for their God-given right to, you know, to work their own land. And so there's that happening in the background. There's also a quarry, so they're digging into the stone.
Yeah.
And then there's the observatory, the radio telescopes nearby in Birr, and they're exploring the stars. And so I wanted to kind of examine all the ways in which we dig into ourselves, into our hearts, peeling back the surface to see what's beneath.
Now, Ballybeg, as it happens, Brian Friel used the same town name in Dancing with Lunasa, Ballybeg.
Oh,
so
gosh.
There you are.
Yeah, I'm not very original, am I?
no harm, because it's a small Ballybeg, small town, and
yes,
that's exactly what it is. But the kind of repression that's there, I mean, the parental generation is repressed, her mother particularly, and father, he, I suppose, went along with it. But they decided that once the baby was born all those years ago, your man, Jamie, had to go.
Yeah, they separated the young loves. And he wasn't a dad that wanted to run away. He very much wanted to stay and raise his family. And
he would, the little opportunity he had, he would be on the ground, on the carpet,
absolutely,
playing with the baby.
Yeah, but they sent him off to Liverpool. So they're torn apart. But he does come back into the story because his father is the person who is, he's protesting his land. And so he comes back. So there's a question there of whether they can be reunited. But it's about, I was really, her mother is very narcissistic and I was intrigued by this idea of infantilization, so that this 32-year-old woman is still being treated like a child and she's being belittled in so many different ways that her world is literally getting smaller and smaller and smaller, hence the origami metaphor. So it's time for her to open up and flourish.
But it has to almost happen to her first. I mean,
yes,
the opportunity has got to be presented to her. She would find it difficult to make those daring moves herself at this age.
Yeah, so somebody comes into her life and he works at the observatory. He's an astronomer and he helps her to look up. You know, she's been looking, feeling trapped all this time in this small town. And he shows her that, you know, if you look up, there's the stars and there's more possibilities for you. Life is so much bigger than you think. So he helps her day by day, introduce her to making new decisions.
Now, the relationship between mother and daughter is very interesting because, I mean, the daughter is approaching the age or is at the age where she had a baby herself.
Yeah.
And the way you capture the teenager's room, the door is locked. And occasionally when they're going down for dinner, when Josephine calls, it's time for dinner. Pip, the protagonist, savors those few moments on the stairs going down when the door to Bella's room is just open a notch.
Yeah.
And a little bit of that life seeps out of Bella's room. I found that image very evocative.
Yeah, it is. It's Bella's world and she's not allowed in it. And they have mostly a kind of sister relationship, and Pip really wants to be her mother. And so she's grabbing these small moments that she can, as you say, going down the stairs to dinner, because her mother's always there and is always controlling. So she's trying to steal away these little moments she can to have an impact on her daughter.
And everything about her life is constrained. I mean, they used to live in town. Her father worked on the quarry, and his ambition in life was to build his own house, which he does, but never quite finishes it.
Yeah, and the cracks start to growing. More metaphors that the, you know, this family isn't as solid and as stable as they hope. Mm.
And where she used to be able to walk home from anywhere, now she's out the road as, you know, bungalow bliss or blitz, whichever you like.
Yeah.
You know, constrains her even further.
She can't drive. Her dad drives her to work, collects her from work. It's a very controlled life. For a 32-year-old woman, there's not very much freedom. And so actually looking at her daughter at 16 years old and seeing the kind of confidence that her daughter has at this age, you know, the sway in her hips and her chin is high, as most 16-year-olds are now, in comparison to how she was.
I mean, she observes her daughter getting out of the car, her grandmother's car, and striding across wearing leggings and knowing all the guys are looking at her backside.
Yeah.
And saying she never at that age would have had the confidence to stride across in front of a gang of men.
Yeah. Well, at that age, she was pregnant. She was hiding her body. There was the shame. There was the guilt. Her family were so embarrassed. And so it's a very different life for her. But she's learning and feeling inspired by her 16-year-old and thinking, well, she never wants her 16-year-old to have the life that she has. But why should she settle for the life that she now has? So it's time to change. Things
and she's
are bubbling.
Terrified, of course, that the same thing might happen to her own child unwittingly, because that's the way Romeo and Juliet, that age group is at that moment. We won't give away any more, because although you are one who tends to happy endings, so we'll say no more than that.
Yes, hopeful endings.
Yeah. What about other projects? Have you movies on the way?
Yes, so my third novel, If You Could See Me Now, is the next to go into production. That should hopefully be the early next year. It's casting at the moment, so I'm excited about that. And yeah, still, I've just finished writing my next novel, so that will be out. I'll be back, hopefully, with you if you'll have me back this time next year.
Okay, now you might have been undergoing a massive change in life if Dad had become Uthron the Heron. Did you chat to him about that?
Oh, yes, of course we did. Yeah, big chat.
So did you encourage him or not?
I encouraged him if it's something that he wanted to do. I knew that he'd be brilliant at it, to be honest. I thought he'd be absolutely brilliant in that role. But look, it's not to be. So that's okay. We'll have him back with us a bit more.
He was quite caught up about it, wasn't he?
I think he's clearly disappointed, because it's something he wanted, but it's not the way it went.
I mean, he really still travels around the country. He's not one for sitting still.
Oh no, travels around the country, travels around the world. He's doing so many different things internationally over the last 17 years that I don't think people are that aware of. But he's incredibly active, has not left politics or conflict negotiation. And, you know, there's so many different things. I won't give you a CV, but yeah, he's incredibly busy, and he'll just continue doing that.
And even for a moment, you're a great woman for imagination. I mean, because you would not be a great novelist if you weren't. In your quiet moments, did you imagine yourself rollicking across the Phoenix Park with the family?
Well, that would have been a nice one, wouldn't it? But not this lifetime.
Not this lifetime. Anyway, for you, writing still continues. You've already finished number 22.
I finished number 22. I'm very excited about that. And I'm planning now in January, I'll start writing the next one. So it's just, I'm continuing to love it.
Have you ever had writer's block?
Not for a long period of time, thankfully. I just have such a head full of ideas. I'm constantly inspired. And the problem is I have too many ideas and I don't have enough time to write them. So that's why I like to do the short stories, the novels, the TV, the film, as different ways of getting the stories out there.
Mm. Do you still write longhand?
I still write longhand. Yes, I absolutely love it. It still is the way that my voice comes through better through the pen than it does through the microphone. So it's definitely my way of, I think, painting the picture that I'm seeing in my head. That's what it feels like.
Okay. I'd love to see your notebooks. I mean, are they full of crossouts and...
Full of it, yes. And full of date. I like to put the date of writing, the time. So they're like stories of their own, really, of my life and, you know, little scribbles in the margin. And I suppose you get to see how the story develops. But the typing feels quite mechanical for me. So when I write first with the pen, it's with the heart, and then I type with the head.
And then you do the typing yourself. You transcribe from the notebooks and type it up as a manuscript. Do you edit much? Do you have to edit much? I mean, you have an editor, I presume.
I have an editor who I've worked with for 20 years, Lynn Drew. She commissioned P.S. Olivia when we still work together in HarperCollins, which is rare and beautiful. So she knows how I work. And I do. I actually, if anything, I'm doing more editing now because I think I have more confidence to keep playing, as I like to call it, changing the story around and trying to make it stronger and stronger right up to the very last minute.
Well, the current book is called Paper Heart. I did give it a plural in my initial introduction, but that's because there are a series of those little paper hearts.
There are.
Not just one. But the paper heart we're referring to, of course, is Pip's heart.
Yes, that's it. Yeah.
Which is sundered, but perhaps stitched together again. It's a lovely book. It's called Paper Heart. The cover is lovely. It's in a kind of
hot pink, I think.
A hot pink. Yeah. A hot pink.
It's leaping off the shelves.
Published by HarperCollins. And it's author Cecilia Hearn. Once again, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.